This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting windroserecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of the show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Carl Hewlin, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eye. Take yourself a summer holiday.
The Path to Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. This is your first time here. Thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 139 for August 31st, 2021. Features my conversation with a guy named Carl Hewlin, who lives in the UK. Really good dude. We met in a room on Clubhouse, like a lot of the recent guests. Specifically, a room that meets on Sunday mornings about men's issues, where both men and women participate. It's really cool. Last week, it ran 4 hours long, which is a little much for me for a Sunday morning, but it was great. So I wanted to have a conversation with Carl about how he entered into men's work. And so that's what we did. And I think you're going to enjoy it. So I want to mention a couple things. First, I'm going to start doing a daily room on Clubhouse at noon Eastern for 20 or 30 minutes, where these 20 questions that I pose to all the guests and do blog posts with. I hope some of you have seen them, because I have a ton of them, like 50 of them published on the blog, and a lot more to publish that I just have to edit and upload. Time takes time. But anyway, what I want to do is do a little room where I ask the 20 questions to the person on Clubhouse. And you know, I think it's a really good way for people on the app to get to know each other a little bit. Maybe a way for me to bridge the various communities on the app that I'm participating in, and also hopefully get a little bit more of a following and hopefully some more listeners. And ultimately, what I've always said and what I've always wanted for this podcast is to build a community. One of the reasons I want to build a community is to do retreats. And I started planning a retreat for the beginning of January in South Florida. So I'm actually going to go see the venue on Monday, the day before this comes out. So I'll keep you guys posted about that. The other thing I'm doing is an 8-week series of groups called Path to Purpose. I've assembled some assignments. What I've kind of envisioned is doing like a process group where people can come in. I envisioned men, but some women have shown interest, so I left it open. I'm going to accept 8 people. We'll see where it goes. I just started promoting it today. It's going to begin October 4th, but 8 groups that, as of now, what I'm planning to have them meet every Monday, have like a journaling assignment for each group, probably a handful of reading assignments. So each week there will be like a writing prompt, and the participants can write about that during the ensuing week before we meet again, and then we'll process it in the group. And it's all focused on, where am I in life? Where do I want to be in life? Who am I? And as much as anything, it's just a way for a group of people to support each other and just engaging in this type of thought and really being intentional about creating lives that we want for ourselves. So this is something I've wanted to do for a long time. And yeah, so I can give you more information about that. I'll leave a link in the show notes where, you know, you can go and give me your contact information and we can chat about it. So hopefully this thing will go well. I'm really excited about it. And some of my time is beginning to free up, and I'm spending more time on Clubhouse and really devoting time to building this community and working with this community. So anyway, this was a fantastic conversation. Carl's a really nice guy. He's someone who I can see myself collaborating with if he's willing, and someone who I'd really hope to continue to get to know more. And so here you go, Carl Hewlin.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eye. Take yourself a summer holiday.
Here on Clubhouse, where we're recording today, in a Sunday morning room about manhood. It's called Man Enough. And I've listened to you share, and you just seemed like someone who I wanted to get to know. And we've had a couple conversations. So I thought maybe I'd just have you come on and talk about how it is you found yourself investigating this world of men's issues.
It's been a bit of a journey, I think. You know, it kind of started probably 4 or 5 years ago when I struggled with my mental health, if I'm honest. I think I was kind of blundering through life and, you know, as you do, and not really self-aware or anything, and just generally feeling a bit rubbish. And that, you know, that kind of led me, if I'm honest, to a bit of a breakdown and, you know, struggling with my mental health and taking a break from work. And I think that kind of put me on a path of, I kind of opened up a little bit of the world of self-development. You know, something had to change, and I had to, you know, I kind of went to a therapist and things like that. But I think what opened up for me was an awareness that something wasn't right. And it put me on that path a little bit of self-development. And over the years, it's kind of grown, and it's become certainly a passion and a hobby. And I've kind of felt victim to the, you know, kind of the self-development addiction where it kind of just absorbing a lot of information, but not necessarily taking a lot of action. But more recently, in the last couple of years, I did a self-development course called the Landmark Forum, which kind of opened up a few more things for me. And what it actually did was, by me, again, continuing down that path, what I discovered was something called, I read a book called No More Mr. Nice Guy, which was a really interesting book. And it kind of smacked me in the head, really with some of the stuff that was being said in there. And it just kind of really resonated. And I think that was kind of where this, like, men's work and men's issues kind of more became more relevant for me, and how it was impacting my life and my mental health, and things about just some of the behaviors and things like that that these kind of nice guys portray. And from that, I actually was in London doing that Landmark course over the period of about 6 months, because I live in a little island called Jersey. So I was traveling to London every week doing that. And actually, I found that there was a men's group in London where I was, and I went along to that. And it was just so powerful, like being in a room with all these guys opening up and really like talking. And that's just something I'd never experienced. I think I'd always shied away from especially relationships of men, if I'm honest. So yeah, just being in that environment where guys were kind of, we all kind of had this common challenge, I guess, you know, we'd all read this book and resonated with it. And, yeah, I think that kind of set something alight in me, and really realized there was a lot of power in what was happening. So that's kind of how I got into this. It's been a journey on my mental health. It's been a journey around self-development, and then really discovering men's groups, men's circles, and things, and that has really just kind of accelerated my self-development, my growth, and my passion really for this topic. So yeah, that's kind of a very quick overview of kind of what kind of the journey I've been on, really.
Well, a few questions. First of all, when you went into that men's group and experienced something like that for the first time, did you feel like it pretty quickly emboldened you to then open up yourself, hearing all these other guys do it, or were you still trepidatious?
I mean, I guess as you kind of go around the room, you know your turn's coming. So there was definitely that nerves there. But, you know, hearing, there was, again, a lot of, I don't know if comfort's the right word, but just, you know, listening to all these other guys as you go around the room, you're kind of a bit apprehensive because you know you're going to have to speak in a minute, and you're a bit in your head about what you're going to say. But equally, listening to these guys and actually just have it, just knowing, oh my God, I'm not alone in this. You know, these guys are having these same challenges. And, you know, again, looking around the room, you know, all walks of life, all types of different guys, different backgrounds, different, you know, statuses and things like that. And just having that common challenge, you know, was really, yeah, really powerful, I think. And as I kind of went on a few more of them, you know, you start, there was just a lot of, there was a lot of power and acknowledgement there, just knowing that you weren't alone in your challenges. So I think, yeah, that was what really stuck out for me.
When you say you had basically a breakdown, what did that look like?
So I've been in the IT industry for 20 odd years since I left school, basically. And I think I just always had this ethos that I had to work hard. I had, obviously, you know, climb up the corporate ladder and things. And I just got myself into a position where I was working a lot. I just got burnt out. And I think I'd put a lot of pressure on myself to meet the demands of the job, meet the expectations of other people. I couldn't say no. And I'd obviously just felt very uncomfortable for a long time, but I wasn't really aware of that it was, you know, depression and anxiety and all these sorts of things. And it just came to a head one day where I think, I don't even know what it was, if I'm honest, that did it, but I just knew it was, yeah, just a breakdown. I couldn't function basically. And I, you know, went to the doctor and, you know, that was the point where these words were kind of uttered to me that, you know, that I'd kind of never thought that was me. And there was a lot of shame and a lot of, I guess a lot of shame and go, oh no, I can't possibly have any time off work, or who am, you know, why do I feel like this? Cause I guess on the outside, you think, well, I've got a good job. I had a, you know, girlfriend, you know, I've got a loving family and all these sorts of reasons. And you go, well, you know, I've got no reason really to feel like this. So I think as the compound effect of being obviously in that situation, but then the shame and the guilt of then being off work and people asking me why, and, you know, and that was difficult to take really. But yeah, it was just kind of equally, there was a bit of relief as well, knowing that I in some ways I couldn't really do much about it. I just had to kind of accept it, and it is what it was type thing.
Well, I imagine part of that shame that you experienced was because as guys, we're indoctrinated to believe that we're not supposed to have feelings, right?
Yeah.
So then when you have distressing ones, it's like, it makes it twice as bad because you feel bad for feeling in the first place, which is kind of ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think we also, I guess I was also trying to control a lot of things. So I was trying to control my situation at work. I was trying to control my relationship and the, you know, balancing it all. And actually all I was doing was, I thought I was trying to please everyone else and I wasn't pleasing myself, you know, and that control and, again, that shame of failing that, all of those different aspects of work and, you know, home life and everything else. So, yeah, it was a difficult time, I guess. But now thinking back, I'm kind of, it was a pivotal moment in my life, I guess. It was an awareness, something opened up inside of, you know, that something opened up that I could, you know, I was aware of that something wasn't right here and something had to change.
Yeah, you've said that now twice, something wasn't right. So I want to ask you, looking back, after what you've learned now, looking back, if you could say if something wasn't right, what was it? What wasn't right?
A bunch of things. I wasn't looking after myself. It's probably the key thing. I was so busy doing everything for everyone else and I wasn't doing anything for myself. So, you know, those daily kind of habits. I mean, like one of the biggest one being exercise and fitness. You know, I wasn't really doing anything around that. You know, I'd go for the odd run here and there or whatever, maybe. But I wasn't doing that. I wasn't looking after myself, like with nutrition, you know, food and stuff like that. It was everything was kind of just a means to an end, just to kind of carry on going, get me, you know, through the day. You know, come home absolutely exhausted, drink some wine, you know, eat some food and then kind of comatose out in front of the TV. Do you know what I mean? I didn't really realize the power of more positive daily habits around that, especially just exercise and eating healthier, probably the two biggest things. But just boundaries, I think in general, again, I couldn't say no. I was doing everything for everyone else. So, you know, exhausted and then resenting it as well. Right. So saying, you know, saying no to anybody and trying to keep everyone happy, but then angry and resentful because of it.
Yeah. Sort of victimizing yourself ultimately, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just remember being a very angry person, really. Just frustrated and angry all the time. It's just that I can't, it's a whole combination of things, I think, but I would say definitely just not looking after myself.
Well, so I'm familiar with the book you mentioned, but for the listener who isn't, the whole idea of the nice guy syndrome in the book, No More Mr. Nice Guy, can you kind of give folks an idea of basically the premise of this book and how it applies to your life?
Yeah, there's what they call those nice guy traits. And I guess, you know, people pleasing is one of them. It's kind of, we all go to the, you know, we kind of see this the jerk type guy, and we kind of go to the opposite scale of that, thinking, well, I don't want to be the jerk. And actually, but a lot of the stuff that the nice guy does is equally as kind of a negative as the jerk behavior, but it's kind of done in a more covert way. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, I think quite often the nice guy is quite dishonest, because, you know, we go along, you know, we don't say no to people, and, you know, we go along with things, but actually you don't want to do them, or you do things maybe for the wrong reasons because you want people to like you and stuff. So actually you become quite a dishonest person. I don't think you're necessarily aware that you're being dishonest, but, you know, by the fact that you're not speaking your truth and saying how that impacts you, or say no, or setting boundaries, that has a big factor in, you know, you effectively are being dishonest. I think a lot of it is around that, just not really being authentic with who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, when you read the book and you read it as a man, I really resonated with a lot of the different situations, scenarios and things like that that were kind of explained in the book. And a lot of it comes from, you know, having a kind of this connection with your mother, and you know, you're kind of that need for like affection from your mother, and how that then you look for that in a partner and things like that. So yeah, there's really a few interesting dynamics that they talk about in the book.
And fear of abandonment. I found this book probably 6 or 7 years after I could have really used it. And I worked through a lot of that stuff in different ways. You know, I got a lot of that information from Robert Bly's work. And for me, the way I describe it is that I really didn't show up in my marriage. I was very agreeable and accommodating and kind of went along with everything. But what I didn't do was, like you said, speak my truth. I didn't really talk about what I wanted. I usually, like you said, would sort of forfeit my position in a disagreement a lot of times, kind of deferring to my ex-wife. And then, you know, it was really easy for me to sit back and describe her as a controlling person. But the reality is, even if she was, you know, I wasn't accepting responsibility for my part in the development of the relationship. You know, I rolled over from the beginning. And so for me, by the time I figured out what I was doing wrong and started to change, it was probably too late. It was too late. I mean, she was used to me the way I was before and wasn't really interested in having me be more assertive. She liked me better going along with everything. And so then it became pretty clear to me, I can't be myself in this. So it didn't make sense. It was really easy to determine that it wouldn't be right for me to stick around at this point. So the decision sort of made itself. But yeah, I think a lot of us fall into that trap. And to me, one of the lessons in this that I learned is that, you know, a man who is in his power is decisive, right? We make decisions. We don't leave them for somebody else to make. The energy is active rather than passive, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, avoiding conflict is a big one that I definitely resonated with. Again, it goes back to speaking your truth, but I repressed my feelings and, you know, didn't speak my truth because I didn't want to upset them. And everything I've learned is actually kind of has the opposite effect to some degree, right?
Well, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because we're creating the circumstance. What we're doing isn't going to work. We can't connect with another person if we're not being real. It doesn't happen that way, right?
Yeah. And I think I talk about you know, men being like Mr. Teflon, you know, we want to try and hide all our rough edges and all the things that, you know, that we might not be comfortable with ourselves. But again, by doing that, we're not being authentic. We're not being our true self. And actually, you know, again, we think, well, oh, I can't show them that or show that side of me or whatever, because I want them to like me. But actually, it has, again, the opposite effect that people, you know, that they think, well, this guy's too good to be true. You know, what's wrong with him? I'm not finding any flaws of him. And actually, that's not also appealing as well. They want to know that there's something about you that they think is a bit of a mystery or something there that's not quite right. So, yeah, those are the sorts of things that definitely resonated with me. Again, it goes back to that control thing, just trying to control what people thought of me and, you know, hide my bad, you know, my perception of my bad features or flaws or personality traits or whatever it might be. And yeah, just, you can't keep that up for very long, right? It's at some point it will come out and bite you.
Well, so now looking back and thinking about where you are now after having done some of this work, what would you say has been the result in your life day to day? How has it influenced the way you show up in relationships?
I think, you know, it's a work in progress. If I'm honest, Tom, you know, I'm not perfect. And even though you know some of these things, I still find it quite difficult sometimes to speak my truth. But I'm definitely more aware of myself. I'm definitely, I think, you know, having those habits and that, you know, keeping, you know, trying to keep those boundaries, you know, and doing the exercise and things allows me to be more self-aware. As I say, I'm not perfect. I definitely still fall victim of some of these traits. And even as recently as this year, you know, I was definitely not showing up as I could have been. And I think that was because I did let my boundaries go again a little bit. But I think the biggest lesson I've learned is you need to speak your truth. You need to speak up for yourself and know that if it's uncomfortable and you're going to have that perception of conflict, but actually, you know, it's worth that uncomfortableness to kind of just, I think, speak your truth. So that, I think that side is definitely something that I'm still working on. You know, I'm not in a relationship at the moment, so a lot of it is just kind of learning. And again, like that room that you mentioned earlier on, you know, that's been a great room. That's been a really interesting room on a Sunday on Clubhouse where, you know, we kind of hear the truth on both sides, you know, women and men, that they're largely done the work, you know, on themselves, and they're a bit more self-aware. So I guess, you know, but it's really interesting to have those conversations. And I've learned a hell of a lot in that, especially around, you know, masculine and feminine energy as well. And these, you know, these kind of perceptions of how men and women think and stuff like that. But I think probably the biggest game changer for me on just kind of my journey is just been having a good routine around my personal habits and things, certainly around exercise, meditation, stuff like that. They're probably been like the biggest changes that have happened to me over the last 4 or 5 years that have kind of keep me kind of in a good place, if that kind of makes sense.
When you say, you know, you're not there yet, I think one of the things that's important for us to remember is that all of this is a practice, right? It doesn't happen all at once. And it takes time. And the point is to keep progressing incrementally. You know, I haven't really been in a serious relationship. One, I guess, since I started doing this kind of work. But it really took flight after my last serious relationship. And now, it just, the practice of, well, before I used to just show up as whoever I thought she wanted me to be, you know, whoever I needed to be in order for her to stick around or to like me or whatever. And I was really kind of hiding out. And so just going through the motions of being completely real about what I want, what I don't, what I'm looking for in a relationship, all that stuff. You know, if we do it on the front end, then we don't have to, you know, we don't have to backtrack. We don't have to clean it up. And so it's been a practice of doing those things more and more and saying the kinds of things to women that I never would have said in the past. And I don't mean disrespectful things, but honest things like, no, you know, I didn't like it when you said that. Or, you know, there was one situation with a woman a while back. She really embarrassed me. And in the past, I would have kind of probably pretended like it didn't happen and just went on, but I didn't. You know, I let her know. And it changed the course of the relationship. You know, it ended. But I was real. And, you know, ultimately, if it's someone who I can't be real with, then I probably shouldn't be with her, right? I
mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a big lesson that I've learned as well. And I think some of this has come from having quite a scarcity mindset as well, you know, thinking of, you know, I found this woman and, you know, she really likes me and she's really, you know, really attractive or whatever. And you might.
When am I going to find someone like her again? Right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I've changed because I think, I've got to keep this woman. But actually, you change from the person that they actually liked in the first place as well. I mean, I think that's the other big lesson I've learned from recent relationships is, you know, when you don't show up as the person that you are at the beginning, well, you do change, and that's not the person that they were attracted to in the first place. So, yeah.
It's a bait and switch.
Yeah.
The landmark thing, would you say that it was an opportunity for you to really examine your beliefs? Because that's, you know, we don't realize how much the beliefs we have control our behavior. And that's one of the ways that I benefited from doing that kind of work.
Yeah, definitely. I did something else as well, actually, before that. I'd done probably more towards my earlier part of the journey, which I did something called the Hoffman process as well. But, you know, they both very much, you know, all these programs kind of deal with similar things, but a lot of them highlight, you know, patterns of behavior that you learn in childhood, especially maybe from your parents and things like that. And, you know, just having that awareness of, yeah, those patterns of behavior and where they might have come from or events that triggered those or caused a belief to happen. The landmark, you know, talks about, like, so certain, you know, stories that you tell yourself and, you know, kind of formulas you come up with to kind of deal with those and, you know, kind of how they become kind of, as I say, the story that you constantly tell yourself and, you know, that often happens when you're tall, you know, between like 7 to 10 year old or something. So I think, yeah, just having that awareness of those things and again, being in a group of people where people are sharing stories and, you know, talking about things and you resonate with their story, even though it might not be quite how it worked for you. You know, there's a power there in understanding. But equally, I think I had some great, I mean, there were great courses and things. I think I kind of got it intellectually, but I think I was still waiting for this like eureka moment of like, oh wow, that's why I feel like the way I do or whatever. And it never came, if I'm honest. And I was always a bit disappointed it never came. You see these people having like, you know, these like eureka moments around you. I kind of felt like it never happened for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, again, an awareness. So, you know, that's something that I've definitely, oh my God, they've had all this childhood trauma and this happened to them. And, you know, my life generally, you know, has been fine, really, when you think, you know, compare it to some others.
Well, you know, essentially what you're doing is invalidating your feelings when you do that.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
so.
Exactly.
And what I'm thinking about listening to you is, you know, and I've done a lot of different kinds of work on myself over the years, but probably what has been more effective than anything else is just the practice of not avoiding my emotions.
Yeah.
You know, we're so adept at distracting ourselves from what we're feeling. And those emotions don't go anywhere if we don't process through them. We carry them around in our bodies. So what you're talking about, like having the knowledge, but not feeling like you internalize the change. I experienced that a lot and really began to internalize the change and really feel different when I was willing to just sit. And what my therapist, the way she describes it, is sitting in the feeling until you get back to neutral, because it happens. We have this fear that if we feel sad or angry or whatever, that it's going to last forever. We react as though it's going to, avoid it as if it's going to last forever. And it just never does, you know? But that has been a huge difference maker for me.
Yeah, me too. And I think what's helped me with that, and it goes back to the men's groups and things, is actually finding, it comes back to all the stuff you hear in self-development and things. It's, you know, being around the right people. And I think what's allowed me to be able to express my emotions and express my feelings and things is being around like-minded people. And especially being around men, I think, has been a, it was easier to express some of these feelings maybe with women, but being around men and being around men that are in a space where they're willing to be vulnerable and do that, I think that's been a real, has been a game changer for me. And being, you know, obviously seeking out coaches and, but just like-minded people. And I've created a men's group and things, and, you know, just been able to express those feelings and speak about it around other people that can kind of validate those feelings and emotions as well has been really powerful for me.
So, you know, this is something that over the years I've heard a lot from men and about men, that because we have these issues around our emotional experience and we're indoctrinated to believe we shouldn't feel, the path of least resistance for me as a young man was to talk to women about this kind of stuff. And there weren't many men who I could talk to who could like sit with me in it, be there and understand and not criticize. And because what happens a lot of times, if we're not with the right people having these conversations, then they're not comfortable with our discomfort and they can't tolerate it. So they'll get irritated or they'll be indifferent or whatever, because they're not there. And when we talk about this stuff, it brings up things in them that they don't want to deal with, right?
Yeah, I think what I've learned in going to these men's groups and things is that I think guys generally do want to talk about it, but they don't know how to talk about it. And also, that, like you said, they don't have the language to deal with it when they receive it. So like you say, they just feel very uncomfortable, or they try and fix it or fob it off. Oh, come on, mate, you know, just have another beer, or, you know, it'll be all right, or whatever it is. And they just don't have the tools and the, as I say, the language to deal with it. And yeah, like you say, probably brings up a lot of uncomfortableness in themselves.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of times what we do when we hear someone talk about how they feel when it's a quote unquote negative feeling is explain to them why they shouldn't feel that way. We try to explain to them, oh, you know, it's okay. It's, you know, and it just, that doesn't help, you know, it never helps.
Yeah. I think one of the things I've only really realized recently, and I'm again doing the work for it, is that, you know, you have that feeling and then you judge yourself for having that feeling. So actually, in some ways, the judgment is worse than the feeling.
Right.
Again, it comes back to that shame and everything. So, you know, and then that negative self-talk. So, you know, you have a feeling and it's negative, or it's not, you're not happy. And then you go, oh, for God's sake, come on, Carl, put it together, or you're bloody useless, or, you know, all that negative self-talk that kicks in. And actually, that is more destructive and worse than the actual negative feeling in the first place.
Right.
And again, I just don't think we're aware a lot of the time that, well, I'm not aware, or wasn't aware that that was even happening. It was just kind of all merged into one, and I wasn't able to separate kind of the feeling with the thoughts that were going with the feeling.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but until I learned to tease some of these things out of my consciousness, you know, like the critical voices and all that, before I was able to make sense of what was happening, it just hurt. You know, it just hurt. And I didn't know why. I didn't like, what is wrong with me? Why do I feel this way?
Yeah. And that's how I felt when I said at the, you know, right back at the beginning, when I didn't have any awareness, that's exactly how I felt. And now having that awareness, in some ways, ignorance was a bit bliss, but you know, now you do have that awareness. I can definitely get myself out of that place a lot quicker and easier than I could previously. So that's the toolkit you get, the experience and having the people around you that are able to understand what you're experiencing and talk to you in a way that helps, you know, all those things help for sure.
So let me ask you this, and I think we may have talked about this, but I can't remember. Do you ever feel like, you ever have that feeling like I'm still a little boy, I'm not really a man?
Yeah, sometimes I think I just feel like a scared little boy, for sure. And I think it comes up, you know, my childhood, I was bullied and things. And I think that comes back to a lot of my traits and survival mechanisms I dealt to deal with that. And I think, there's times where I am that scared little boy, or, you know, situations occur, especially like around conflict and things like that. I think it brings back some of that fear around those sorts of memories as a child, maybe. And then maybe that, I mean, that's probably how I kind of, that's what's resonating with me the most when you say that to me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys who have experienced that, and I haven't experienced it for a long time. I mean, I've had feelings of I'm not good enough, but really that changed when I went through my divorce and the custody issues and all that. I mean, but before that, I mean, there were just a lot of times when I felt like I was lost and I really wasn't a man yet, even though I was. Not all the time, but it would come up. The feeling would come up. And it probably until I was in my mid to late 30s, that would happen. But it hasn't happened for a long time. And, you know, I think I more ask that for the guys who are listening than for you, because I feel like that's one of the things that happens with us. We just like feel lost sometimes. And, you know, there are all these ideas that people have about what it means to be a man, but it's not really very clear. And we don't do a very good job of teaching each other how to be men, I don't think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've investigated these topics, you know, just around like role models and purpose and, you know, all these things. And I guess, again, all that, you know, again, back at the beginning, I didn't have any of that information. I didn't have a purpose. You know, I didn't know really what my identity was, you know, what my dreams were. I was just surviving, you know, just surviving, living for the weekend, surviving, get through this next bit of work, challenge, whatever it was, with no real, I guess I had drive to get work done, but I had no real long-term goals or anything like that, and completely felt lost. Felt lost is probably the easiest, yeah, like you say, would probably sum it up the most. No idea of what it meant to be a man. I think I probably, how I relate to that, probably what it means to be a man is to be a father and a husband with those roles. But again, not necessarily knew how to do either of those properly. And I'm neither of those. And I think that's also been part of my journey as well, of a big identity crisis around. As I grow up, I thought, well, to be a man, it means to be a father and a husband. And I've not ticked those two boxes. I've not done either. So I think, again, a lot of shame to say, well, I've failed those things, even though I've never done them. And that was kind of what my identity was going to be. So that was kind of where what my goals were in life was to be those two things. And actually, you know, nothing around all the other stuff around like life purpose and things.
I had a guest a while back who's an author and wrote a book about stuff that she went through in her early 30s. And the term that she uses that comes to mind is toxic milestone mentality.
when I was a late adolescent, young adult, I thought there was something wrong with me because I was 18 years old and I didn't know what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And, you know, at 25, 26 years old, I wasn't married yet. And I thought there was something wrong with me because I wasn't married yet.
Yeah.
There are just these expectations, sort of unwritten rules in Western culture about how the sequence is supposed to work. And if we deviate from that, to the extent that I deviated from it, I felt like something's wrong with me.
Yeah. And actually, you just kind of reminded me of something. And I think going back to where I was and my breakdown and things, I think I was in a place and in a relationship because I thought it was what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. And actually, again, I think it goes back to just not being authentic and not being where I wanted to be. And yeah, because it was like, I thought this is what I should do, what the path is for me. And actually, you know, this is a good fit. So this is what I should be doing.
Right, right. And it just makes me wonder how many men, how many people are out there who are just like going through life with blinders on, doing what they think they're supposed to do rather than what they actually want to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, yeah, they've done that. They've fallen into relationships, jobs, whatever, and they can't see how to get out of it. And again, I think it comes down to things like we talked about, you know, setting boundaries and things. They're just so in it now. It's difficult to see how they can do anything different. Yeah, I guess I'm thankful that some of those things haven't happened because it's given me the flexibility and freedom to discover myself to some, right, in some part. So yeah, I definitely think that happens. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm going back to the purpose thing. I mentioned this book to you in our last conversation, Fire in the Belly by Sam Keen. And the key concept that I take from that book is he talks about how as men, we need to have our purpose before we find our partner. And if we get those juxtaposed, it's never really going to work out. It's going to be problematic. And I know for me, being attached to someone was always such a high priority for me that I tabled everything else. And that's a key difference in who I am now as compared to who I was in the significant relationships that I've been in, because now I know what I want and I'm more focused on my purpose. I'm more focused on what I need to do, what I want to do to carry it out. And now, you know, I'm not going to choose a partner who doesn't fit in that picture. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. I think that's, we're just not taught this stuff. That's the sad thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely like my number one goal was find a girlfriend, find a wife. And that's what I thought. Again, it goes back to what you thought you needed to do, right? It was fine. And, you know, I guess as growing up and, you know, you watch TVs and movies and things and you get all of this stuff thrown at you about how you should be and, you know, oh, you complete me and I need to find somebody that, you know, completes me and all that sort of stuff. And it's a load of rubbish.
Right.
You need to be complete in yourself. You are whole in yourself. You don't need somebody to complete you.
Right.
And I think that's been such a mindset shift for me. It's like always looking for somebody as if there's a part of me that's missing and I need to fill it. And I think, again, that's why when you have found somebody, I felt there was that need for them to complete me. And then because they're there, I need to keep them and control the situation so I don't lose a part of me. But it's just, that's just not true. Do you know what I mean? We are complete in ourselves. And, you know, and again, we have to love ourselves and be, you know, be happy with who we are.
So that's a great segue because I keep thinking I'm going to ask you one more question. And then I think of another one. Self-love. That has been one that has taken me a really long time to wrap my head around. to get comfortable with. And I think being a guy, like, what the hell does that even mean? So, you know, it just has taken me a long time. And one of the conclusions I came to a while back that has sort of helped me with that a little bit is, you know, if you think about that girl who you loved or love more than anything else, she didn't do that. You had that. You know, when I think about that girl, man, it was already inside of me. The love was already inside of me. It just came out. It was a target for it, you know? And I've made such poor choices with choosing unavailable women in the past. Like, it was very clear that they weren't doing anything to create that or earn it. It was in me already. It was there. And so if you think about that, that power that we have to love, if we can just start by being nice to ourselves and pay attention to how we speak to ourselves, that has worked well for me. That has been really, it's really made a difference, paying attention to the things I say to myself and not saying negative things to myself, just putting it into it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is something that I'm only recently realized, I think, as it's been pointed out to me, some of how I might speak to myself. Absolutely. It's been quite a big shift for me as well. If we talk to others like we talk to ourselves, we'd have any friends.
Right. Right.
You know, no one would be talking to you. So, as I said, and as I mentioned it earlier, just beating yourself up for feeling a certain way and judging and, you know, oh, you did that, you idiot. And just that negative self-talk all the time. And yeah, that's been a big shift for me. And just also, as I say, just knowing what light fills your cup. You know, you can't pour from an empty cup. And I think, again, we're trying to get comes back again to, you know, keeping those boundaries and knowing what, you know, what fills you up and being able to then be, you know, not giving in to those things. As I say, especially in a relationship, you know, it's great when you're single and you're doing everything, you're going to the gym and, you know, you're going out with your buddies and all these things that, you know, really fills your cup up. And as soon as you get in a relationship, you again, if you put them on a pedestal or think they're the ones that are going to give you everything you need, you know, you start kind of slowly losing or slowly giving up the things that, you know, that fill your cup up. And over time, it just kind of whittles away. And, you know, that's self-love, right? You need to do those things and not fit. I used to always think it was very selfish to do that as well. I think that's a big shift I had as well. You know, it's a bit selfish if I'd have time to myself or, you know, say no to people or whatever. And actually it's not selfish, it's selfless. Do you know what I mean? You need to do that so you can then show up for them.
Well, and you know, this is one of the reasons why we need other guys. We need other guys because I have done this and I think a lot of men do this where they get so consumed with the relationship that they, if they don't lose themselves completely, which often happens, they rely on their partner for so much emotionally, friendship. You know, I mean, we need more than one human being. We do.
Yeah.
And it's unrealistic to expect one person to be able to meet all of our needs. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it just puts a huge pressure on them, right? Fill all these different needs. And I think, as I grew up, there was a lot, I think, you know, it comes back to the nice guy thing. You can kind of see, you know, the kind of stereotypical jerky type guy that might be out with his, you know, treat women in a certain way and is in a nightclub, you know, might be like flirting with other women when he's got, a girlfriend at home. And, you know, all these kind of behaviors that I kind of witnessed and thought, oh, I'm not going to do those sorts of things. Or then maybe subconsciously, again, I think another big thing is around like masculinity and toxic masculinity. And, you know, I merge those two things together. Do you know what I mean? And actually, there's a lot of positive things about masculinity.
Right.
But I think I was probably guilty of seeing a lot of that as negative.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that was just like the guys, and that was just their behavior. And actually, oh, I'm not going to associate myself with that sort of behavior. And again, a lot of it comes in sport and things. And I think I kind of distanced myself from sport, and that, I guess that's where a lot of male bonding happens, I guess, in those sorts of clubs and things like that. So I grew up never really, kind of distancing myself from that, but losing a lot of that male bonding that, you know, we do need, you know, growing up.
So speaking of which, talk about your group.
Yeah. So, as I say, as part of the Landmark journey I went on, we needed to create a community project. And I, after being inspired by going to the men's groups, I created a men's group. I called it Man Size Sharing. Obviously, this was pre-COVID. So we did it in person. I'd helped set up, took some time out from work that year, and I'd helped set up a restaurant. So concept was that it was a men's group to get together and just be more real, cut through the bull. You know, we're going to talk about a bit more meaningful stuff. And it wasn't really necessarily focused around like mental health, but obviously that was going to have a big part in it. But it was just guys getting together and having a bit more of an authentic conversation. So yeah, created that Man Size Sharing. It was in person. We did it in Jersey where I live. And you know, it was great. We were getting 10 or so people coming to each meeting. We did it, you know, we had about 3 or 4 sessions. It was great. And obviously then COVID hit, and we took it online and did it there. And it was just a really powerful space. And I met some great people, obviously more local really at the time where I live. But since then, and, you know, discovering apps like Clubhouse, I've obviously been doing my men's room on Clubhouse, and we've just been talking. That's been more around, just covering these sorts of topics like, you know, purpose and ego and masculinity and things like that. So I've had a lot of benefit out of that, but I think just being on that path of discovering men's groups, you know, I spent some time in Bali at the beginning of 2020, and there was so many men's groups and men's circles and things. So I've just really been trying to embrace that kind of brotherhood, authentic, you know, space where men are sharing vulnerably and so stuff. But that's kind of led me down this journey. I think, again, part of my early days with this, I felt guilty about maybe looking to how I could potentially change career into this path, you know, but it was kind of becoming a passion of mine, but I was feeling a bit guilty as if this is something that, you know, I should be potentially charging for or looking to build a business around. And it's only really recently with working with coaches and things that, and being on a, you know, app like Clubhouse and seeing the need for this and, you know, other people, you know, doing similar work, that's actually led me into that mind shift that I can, you know, I can definitely help more men, you know, in this work really. And just that understanding, you know, I say by no means an expert and a work in progress, but, you know, I think there's people out there that, like you say, that are just, you know, in a place I was a few years ago, they're just lost and, you know, struggling and things like that. So it's just really become just such a huge passion for me. And, just really want to help as many men, I guess, as I can really.
Well, you know, that part of it, I can relate, having that feeling of, would it be right to charge something for this or not? And, you know, I've done more real therapeutic sort of groups. And then, you know, now I do what's more of a men's support group, but we get pretty deep, you know, and I facilitate it. And you'll figure it out. But Carl, man, this has been great. I really appreciate you investing the time in this, and also just bringing it, you know, being really transparent and being willing to talk about all this stuff with a little audience, no less. So thank you. I appreciate it, man.
I know. It's been a pleasure, Tom. Thank you, mate. Yeah, I know we've spoken before, and I think it really resonated with each other and each other's journey. So, yeah, no, it's just been a pleasure. Thank you.
There you go, Carl Hewlin. Please subscribe, follow, like, rate, review the show anywhere you can, anywhere you listen, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Those are the two that I tend to focus on more. When I listen on Spotify. But it's still true that all the ratings, reviews, all that stuff goes a lot further with Apple Podcasts. So if you could leave a review there, that'd be fantastic. I want to thank the show's sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. If you enjoy the show and you want to support the show, you can gain access to all sorts of supplemental content on Patreon. That's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. There are a limited number of spots I'm leaving open at $1 a month where you can gain early access to the episodes, usually 4 or 5 days ahead of time at least. You can get my Saturday Dispatch, which is a little mini check-in episode that I do every week. And at this point, there are a couple hundred MP3 files that only patrons have access to. Back episodes that aren't showing up anymore in the podcast players. So, yeah. I'd appreciate any support. If you want to call, leave feedback, questions, you can call 561-247-4757 and leave a message. I'd love to hear from you. Appreciate any feedback you have to offer. It's a great episode. I hope you guys will check me out, check the show out on Clubhouse. I've gotten a little momentum this week, getting a couple of my what I call terrestrial friends who aren't on Clubhouse to come on Clubhouse and participate a little bit, because I know they have so much to offer the people there. So I'm kind of excited because that happened a couple times this week. Going to be doing more and more of that. I'm in the middle of creating another little mini podcast for people in recovery or who want to be in recovery. And, you know, I'm doing that with a room on Clubhouse where I'm recording. So, yeah, I'm going to be doing more and more sort of community building things on Clubhouse. And like I said at the top of this, what this has always been about for me is building a community. And so far it's been very gratifying. And I know it's only going to get better. So, as always, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show, to support me. I got a special episode coming up next week. It's a milestone for me in my life next week, a big one. And so the next episode's just going to be me talking. And I'm excited about that and also a little nervous about it, to be perfectly honest. But I hope you come back and I hope you listen. And again, I hope you have a great week. Be nice. Thank you.
turned over, started new again. I'll play for you and maybe you'll see what my dad always said.
Guitar player.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.